Welcome to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland in our Buck studio again. We have live music, and it's going to be a fun and educational hour, too, with Christopher Taylor. Welcome back to the Midday.
Thank you. Pleasure to be back.
I can't remember where I heard this, that even though, you know, you have performed all 32 of the Beethoven piano sonatas from memory in a vast cycle, you performed concertos, you'll be performing a couple of concertos with the Madison Symphony in a few weeks. We'll get into that as that time approaches. But somewhere I heard that you have a real fondness for ragtime.
That's right. From practically the time I started playing piano, that was right around the time that ragtime was emerging again from many decades of obscurity.
The Sting. It was that all that movie, The Sting. Everybody says that.
Yeah, that was the era. And so I became quite captivated with ragtime. And as a matter of fact, the first solo recital that I ever gave at age 10 was all rags.
Oh, really?
All Joplin. That's right.
Well, it's stuff that wears well.
It does.
Before we get into one, we were talking about this the other day, a cohort and I. Is it classical music?
It's certainly classic.
And it's, stood the test of time.
It has. It's music that I respect tremendously, and it's lively and entertaining. But it's also got a great deal of depth, and there's
structure, right?
Oh yes, mm-hmm. And there's a certain sort of lyrical sweetness to. I mean, Joplin's writing in particular, and sort of an American Schubert in a way.
So lyrical.
Yes.
And, yeah. So absolutely. Memorable. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more, too. But first, there is, this is kind of unusual with a genre of any kind, that you can pinpoint so specifically its beginning in a particular piece. Now, I mean, you can wiggle this a couple of years one way or the other, but right. The one that really seems to put ragtime on the map is the Maple Leaf Rag.
That's right. And it was published in 1899 and was an immediate sensation. Obviously, it didn't come out of nowhere. It had certain antecedents, and in some relatively respectable circles, like Sousa marches and things like that. But then also, in the bordellos and so forth. And
the Sousa band just couldn't get into the bordellos. It was so unwieldy. Had to leave it to a pianist.
yeah. So that wound up being, that job was thrown in the pianist's laps.
So we have the Maple Leaf.
Yes. So here it is.
Thank you.
Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin, the one that really put ragtime on the map back in 1899. Now, in the left hand, you can hear some of that Sousa Orchestra influence.
That's right. Yeah, the boom chucks, the stride piano, the bass, and then the chord higher up.
And in the right hand, there seems to be almost a theatrical quality, which is, say, you have a kind of a solo and then a chorus effect that keeps coming back and forth.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, sort of dialogue between two sub-voices within the right-hand part.
Were there ever actually, concert hall performances of ragtime in Joplin's day, early 20th century, or was it really just entertainment music and then sheet music sales?
Basically the latter. I mean, I suppose, you know, if you count sort of vaudeville settings as concert halls.
Smokier than most, but yeah, concert halls. And some of the sheet music, of course, is gorgeous by today's standards because they are all very elaborately illustrated demonstrate, you know, something tied into the title. And the other advantage of this kind of music is it had catchy titles to match the catchy music.
That's right. That's right.
It wouldn't have been like ragtime tune number one, you know. Opus one just wouldn't have cut it for this.
That's right.
Well, okay. Having said that about the venues for these performances, I have to wonder about this next piece because you needed a train to pull it off.
Yes. Well, this is an interesting story. This is a piece that actually predates the Maple Leaf Rag from 1896, so very early in Joplin's career. It's also by Joplin. And it certainly shows the connection with the marching band music of the previous decades. So its title is The Crush Collision March. And there's a pretty interesting story behind this. A few months before the rag appeared, there was a railway engineer with the picturesque name of George Crush. And
not very promising.
Well, perhaps his name sort of inspired him, but he decided he was going to create a public spectacle by taking two old locomotives, two old trains, and set them running towards each other on the same track at 60 miles an hour. And see what happened when they when they collided. And so it was a tremendous public spectacle, and apparently the little town of Crush, Texas, sort of sprang up overnight, and 40,000 people descended on it and got to witness this great event in which the engineers, you know, set the trains going and then jumped off, and everything pretty much went as planned, except the engines did explode on collision, and debris flew everywhere, and two people were killed.
Doesn't happen at most concerts.
Joplin decided to commemorate the event with a march, and which was published just a few months later. And it's quite picturesque. Towards the end, he has these bars that evoke the sound of the engines rumbling towards each other at high speed, and then you hear the train whistling, and then right near the end, you hear a big chord in the bass, and that's the collision. So it's not too hard to miss. Or not too easy. As I said, it gives you some idea of where ragtime came from, or one of its origins. But the syncopated rhythms in the right hand that are so distinctive in Maple Leaf Rag are barely evident yet. But the basic sort of form and the stride figuration in the left hand, that's all present. And, of course, Joplin's lyrical sense, and then also his virtuosity. I mean, he certainly could get around the keyboard with octaves and leaps and all of this stuff.
So here it is. It's the Crush Collision March. Collision March by Scott Joplin, an addition to a distinguished line of train repertory in music, maybe battle music too, I'm inclined to say, and program music, of course.
Right,
you know.
Right.
In fact, when Dick Hyman recorded the complete Joplin back in the 70s, he did this with voiceover. And I don't know if Joplin wrote it or where the words came from, but it was actually play by play.
It's written in the score.
Is it?
Maybe I should do that next time.
Yeah, that's right. Work that up, will you, for the next time. April 9th, I think, right?
Although I think it's reasonably evident what's going on, if you know what the story is.
That's right. It doesn't leave a lot to the imagination. You want to go forward for a time at least with a slightly later ragtime practitioner?
Yes. Joseph Lamb was a student of Joplin's. He was active in the 19-teens and the 20s, so after ragtime's heyday, definitely. But he kept the flame burning a little bit and had a wonderful lyrical sense.
Different style than Joplin, though. I mean, I don't think you'd confuse Lamb's rags with Joplin's.
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, it's maybe clear that the form was sort of older and more mature and no longer sort of fresh, pioneering exploration of unknown territory. But it's very sophisticated. And it's... Lamb was white, but obviously was... an open-minded sort of guy, and was willing to put himself under the instruction of Joplin, and he went to the right source.
So. Yes, the source. Ragtime Nightingale is probably Lamb's best known.
Yeah, I think so, and it's sedate and lyrical, and the left hand is not always just the stride piano figuration, but actually starts with a run that's a little reminiscent of the Chopin Revolutionary Etude, slowed down by a factor of two or so.
Spoken like a true mathematician. Ragtime Nightingale.
Thank you.
Ragtime Nightingale by Joseph Lamb, student of Scott Joplin, and bearing out Joplin's contention that ragtime should take its time.
Yes, exactly.
Lovely stuff. Now back with Christopher Taylor and Ragtime. And where would you like to go from here?
Well, I thought I could do maybe another Joseph Lamb rag, so a couple of years after the Nightingale. So this is Bohemia Rag, and features a little sort of hint of fiddle technique, maybe. Bohemia. Be interesting to see what the cover of the sheet music for that looks like. I'm not sure what he's referring to there. Well, it's a sort of bohemian-looking lady fiddling.
So. Oh, that's it. Okay. Thank you for supplying the visual. You mentioned, and this comes up occasionally, especially at Halloween, but it's good for any time of the year, this wonderful rag by William Bolcom.
Yes. Entitled The Graceful Ghost, and it was written about 1973 or 4. So Bolcom was at the forefront of the ragtime revival, even before the Sting came out. And so in addition to helping with the repopularization of Joplin and the other classics, he decided to write a few of his own. And this one was written as a tribute to his father after his passing. And so it's extremely sophisticated and beautiful and
graceful.
And graceful, yes. Lives up to its name.
Thank you.
Graceful Ghost. Graceful Ghost by William Bokum. And now back with Christopher Taylor and Ragtime. Well, we've heard several of them, including the one that kind of got it all started, but probably the most famous of all rags takes us back to Scott Joplin.
Yeah. So this was the one that brought Ragtime back to the mass public's consciousness, was The Entertainer by Scott Joplin, which came out a couple of years after The Maple Leaf, and at the time was not particularly famous among the rags. I think probably part of the reason is it's so darn hard to play. But yeah, in the movie from, what was it, 1973 or something, The Sting, this was a particularly featured rag. And as a result, I think a lot of people think the title of the rag is The Sting, but it's actually The Entertainer. And as I said, it's one of the hardest ones with a lot of tricky octaves and things like that in the right hand. So it was unfortunate for all of those kids who tried to get the sheet music and learn it back in the 70s.
Did you play that on your first recital?
I certainly had to practice, and I learned quite a bit from it. So.
Well, it's a great way to meet people at a party. You know, if things get quiet, just sit down at the piano, start playing The Entertainer.
That's right.
And you'll make friends fast. Thank you. Very entertaining indeed, the work of Scott Joplin, that most famous of all rags. There are a couple of others among the rags of Joplin, though, that people will tell you, this one is my real favorite. And Solace, a Mexican Serenade, is one of the ones that comes up that way.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. One of the relatively late in his output, I forget, 1908 or something like that. Yeah, he was starting to look across the border a little bit, I guess, and branch out, diversify. And so there's not too much of the standard sort of left-hand figuration in this one, but it's very flowing and, as with all Joplin, extremely lyrical.
Solace. Thank you. Well, can we get in a bit of UB Blake in about 2.5 minutes or so?
2.5 minutes. All right. Maybe I can cut out one strain. So, all right. I'll try and do the abridged version. This is the Charleston Rag, which UB Blake wrote in 1899, same year as the Maple Leaf Rag, but very different sort of thing. So here it is.
Third time, I'm betting.
Yeah, a taste of it, anyway.
That was a brief visit to Charleston. Charleston Rag by UB Blake, who had one advantage Joplin didn't, that is he lived to be 100. So he got to spread his music a lot longer. And thank you for spreading some of yours with us today, Christopher Taylor.
Thank you.
Well, look forward to having you back on April 9th.
Right. Me too.
With a very different kind of program, but also very engaging.